at what we'll do. Unlike last year when we took Muslim subjects, this time we'll, what we'll do is every single week take a parsha, and you know, cover that and see what we can draw from that. Generally speaking, it won't be on Sunday nights. This is an exception. This comes week's parsha is great. There are several things about this. Share important things. First of all, we have Rei Anochi Noten Lefnechem Hayom Bracha Uklala. That's what I'm saying. Ray, see, look. I give you on this day the bracha, the blessing, klalat, the curse. It's an interesting thing to note that it starts off with the concept of Ray, look. Sometimes you have a concept of Shema, listen. But the Torah is basically a book of laws. It's an unnecessary word, Ray, look, Shema, listen. When people speak, or when someone speaks properly, when someone gives a speech, Moshe is giving, this is Moshe's speech. This is the Mishneh Torah. He's going over the various laws. He's giving the speech. Reagan doesn't say, listen, look. That is improper. Unless there is a reason for that word. There's a tremendous reason for that word. All the laws will be irrelevant. They won't have the slightest bearing and people won't follow them unless the people are prepared to look and to listen. Re'eh in itself is a mitzvah. Look. When we look at the problems now, what is the greatest obstacle? The greatest obstacle is that people aren't ready to look. They aren't ready to listen. Before you can see the bracha, you have to be willing to look at it. Before you can see the klala, you have to be willing to look at it. It's much, much easier not to look, to simply turn from it, to set aside your thinking, to turn off. So it has to start with Ray, look. First of all, be willing to look. And if you're willing to look, then you see that I have given you a bracha, a blessing, and a curse. But if you're not willing to look, everything else that I'm gonna say now will not be irrelevant. You won't be looking, you won't be hearing. And so this is a mitzvah, Ray, look. The Sforno has a really very, very, very interesting concept. The Sforno says, I have given you a bracha, a klala, a blessing and a curse. And he says the following thing. Vehem shneha tzavot. They are the two extremes. And this is especially an important thing for people in our days when the concept of an extremist is a bad thing. An extremist is a bad thing. Now, one is not supposed to be an extremist. The Sforno says, I have given you the two extremes. Bracha, a blessing, a klala, a curse. Ki habracha hi hatzlachata, ki hi hatzlacha, yoter min hamaspik. The blessing is more than that which is sufficient enough. The bracha goes beyond that. The haklala, he meira, and the curse is a meira, which also means curse. Mechaseret shelo yusag hamaspik. In other words, it doesn't reach the maspik, that which is sufficient. In other words, there is a median. The bracha goes beyond that. The klala does not reach that. And he makes his point even better. In Pasuk Lamed. Kedei lefarsem b'tchilat k'nisatam. He wants to emphasize and make it clear at the beginning when they enter Israel, shelo tiyeh yeshivatchem al ofen maspik. Not just the ordinary, will come there, a good country, not a great country, and not a terrible country, a good country. Either you will be great or you will be cursed. The Jew is not a moderate. The Jew is not a moderate. There is no in between here. There is no medium over here. Hey, listen, I don't have to be great. I don't have to be bad. I'm a pretty decent guy. God made Jews to be pretty nice people. You'll either be great or you'll be cursed. And that's why you'll find that the blessings sometimes, that God sometimes will compare the Jews to the stars of the heavens, and sometimes to the sands of the earth. And Chazal tell us that the Jew, when he rises greater than anyone else to the heavens. And when he sinks lower than anybody else. Nothing, or every unbelievable sick movement, whether from Marxism to pornography to homosexuality, every sickness, every anti has an unbelievable number of Jews in it. And usually an incredible number of Jewish leaders in it. A Jew has to lead. Either he has to lead greatness or he has to lead mud. But he has to lead. He wasn't made to be in between. And that's the thing over it. To be an when the Rambam says that a person should follow the Shvil HaZahav, the golden mean, what he's talking about is in ordinary things, a person shouldn't eat too much, shouldn't eat too little. A person shouldn't be overly happy and overly sad. A person shouldn't sleep too much, shouldn't sleep too little. It is, but when it comes to the midot of goodness, there is no thing, well, I'll be moderately good. On the contrary, a Jew has to be an extremist in being good, to be as good as possible, to reach as much holiness as possible. In these things, there is nothing moderate about it. This is a really, really great sforno. Which he said, God can't give Jews anything else. So either bracha or a klala. You can't say, God, tell you what, do me a favor. I don't want the bracha. Just give me, something nice. Either a blessing, either greatness, or misery. Nothing in between. Then he says in Perek Yud Aleph Pasuk Lamed Aleph, Ki Atem Ovim Et Hayavim, you are coursing in your joy, Lavo Hareshet Et Haaretz, to go in and to conquer the land, Asher Hashem Elokechem Noten Lachem, which the Lord your God has given you. And here he says, "V'rishtem ota v'shavtem ba," and you shall inherit it, and you shall dwell in it. This is the source in the Sifri for the Mitzvah Yishuv Haaretz. In the Sifri, here are the words of the Sifri on this pasuk. The Sifri, of course, is the Medrash. It says the following thing. Maseh b'Rabbi Yehuda ben Bitera, Rabbi Matya ben Charash, Rabbi Chananya ben Achi, Rabbi Yeshua, Rabbi Natan. These five Tanaim, and they were rabbis. Shayu yotzin chutza la'aretz. They were leaving Israel. They had to leave Israel for a reason. And bear in mind that they lived after the Churban Bayit. So, and that's an important point for you to bear in mind, which I'll point out later. They lived after the destruction of the temple. V'yilir Partia, they reached a town which was apparently the border between Eretz Yisrael and its lands. V'zachru et Eretz Yisrael, and they remembered that they were leaving Eretz Yisrael. V'zakfu et Enihem, they raised their eyes. V'zalgu dim otehem, and their tears flowed. V'kar'u bigdehem, and they rent their garments. V'kar'u ha'mikra hazeh, and they read this pasuk which I just read to you. V'yirishtem v'yashachta ba, and you shall inherit it, and you shall dwell in it. V'amru, and they said, Yeshivat Eretz Yisrael shkula k'neged kol ha'mitzvot. The living in Israel is equal to all of the commandments. And the reason is because this pasuk, and you shall live in it, and you shall inherit it, and live in it, is followed immediately by the following verse, Ushmartem lasot et kol hachukim, and you shall do and observe all of the laws. There is a general rule in Torah that one pasuk doesn't follow a second pasuk just stam kach. There's a reason. There is a conjunction over here. There is a connection. There's a context. So therefore, since it said, since it spoke about observing all of the laws within the context of just of the law of living in Israel, it says that this context shows that the dwelling in the land is equal to doing all the laws. So that's Isifri, and this is the source for the statement that it is a mitzvah to live in Israel. And why did I mention the fact that this story took place after the temple? Because there are those who say that after the destruction of the temple, there is no more mitzvah. That there was a mitzvah as long as there was a temple. But now that there isn't, there isn't. So since this incident took place after the temple was burned, so it's obvious proof, and they said it's that the mitzvah of living in Israel is equal to all of them, so it's fairly fairly clear proof that the mitzvah has nothing to do with whether there is a temple or there isn't a temple. That the mitzvah of living there is, in fact, even according to those who say that after the destruction of the temple, that the Jews are not allowed to rise up and conquer the land, even according to those people. But on an individual basis, every single individual Jew has an obligation to live in Israel. I mean, that has no relevance to whether the Jews have a right to go up and conquer the country, even according to that. But certainly, the individual Jew, according to everybody, has an obligation to live in the land of Israel. And the Ramban brings this down as a mitzvah in our times from the Torah. And he says this, Shenitztaveinu areshet ha'aretz asher natan hakev yitbarech lavoteinu, l'Avraham, l'Yitzhak u'Yaakov. We have an obligation to, there is an obligation to conquer the land. Now, by the way, if you want to talk about extremism, the Ramban believes that there is an obligation to conquer the land, and that every part of the land which is part of Eretz Israel, there is an obligation to go up and conquer it. And he says as follows, V'lo nazva biyad, we are not allowed to leave it in the hands of anyone, ulateinu, except ourselves, min ha'umot o lishmama. We're not allowed to leave it in the hands of any other nation, or even empty and desolate. There is an obligation for the Jew to go up, conquer the land, settle it, and make it grow. That's the Ramban, and that's interesting. Ramban. V'zuhi she'hachachamin marin ota milchemet mitzvah. And this war, to ensure that every part of Israel is in our hands, is what the Chazal, this is what he's saying, call a milchemet mitzvah, a war of obligation. So he calls that a war of obligation. because he says that, and the Gemara says in Sota, it says that Milchemet Yehoshua, Divrei Hakol Chova, the war of Joshua to conquer the country, everybody admits is an obligation, a war of obligation. And the Ramban says there was no reason for us to suppose that there was a greater obligation upon Joshua to conquer the country than upon anybody else to conquer the country. In short, the conquering of Eretz Yisrael is an obligation, is a Milchemet Mitzvah. And so that's what he said. Okay. So this concept here of Eretz Yisrael is, again, we can't emphasize too much the difference between Judaism and every other faith, that Judaism is a land-centered faith. The only faith in the world which is land-centered. And just a couple of examples here, right in this, just first of all, 2 weeks ago in Beit Hanan, you had, over and over again, you had this concept here. Re'eh, this is in the Kanan Perek Dalid, Pasuk Hek. Re'eh, again, he says, look, Marati etchem chukim u'mishpatim, I have taught you statutes and laws, kasher tzivani Hashem Elokai, as the Lord my God has commanded me, lasot kein bekerav aretz, that you should do them in the midst of the land. The same concept is brought, let me just get this, I don't want to skip some of these things. In the same parak dalet, pasuk yud dalet, voti tziva Hashem b'et ha'i, and the Lord commanded me at that time, ramed etchem, to teach you chukim u'mishpatim, lasotchem otam ba'aretz asher atem ovim shem, statutes and laws that you should do them in the land that you should pass over. There are many, many such places. The Ibn Ezra, in Pasuk Yud, in the same Perek Dalet, Pasuk Yud says the following thing. Ki Hashem yada, because God knew, Shelo yuchlu lasot mitzvotav kara'ui vehein baratzot hamoshlim bahem. God knew that it would be impossible for the Jews to properly observe Torah if they lived in countries that ruled over them. You really can't get that too much clearer. What he's really saying here is, not only in terms of them being captive, but more than that, it is impossible to observe Torah fully and therefore properly, because half a Torah loses the entire thing. You either observe the whole thing or else you lose sight of what is supposed to be. You cannot help but have your thinking influenced if you're a minority living in a majority culture. It is impossible to have it otherwise. It is impossible. The reason why, and again, by the same concept is also mentioned, is also said again, not by the Rambam, not by the Ibn Ezra, but the same kind of concept is also said by the Sforno. The Sforno says in the famous thing, Avadim Hayinu Pharaoh in Mitzrayim. Remember, but now at the Seder table we say we're slaves. So that's something. That's a pasuk. Chumash. Et Hanan. Perek Vav. Pasuk Kaf Aleph. Ve'amata Levincha, and you say to your son who asks you, how come? What's all this pace of business? Avadim Ayinu Pharaoh in Mitzrayim. On this, Sforno says, "Uvehayot shebe'avdutenu lo hayinu yicholim liknot hashlemut hamukhuvan meito." Since in our slavery we were unable to acquire the completeness, the shlemut, the totality, which comes from him. He did wonders. Lotzienu, to take us out of it. Ulhavi otanu el haaretz, and to bring us onto the land. Shenuchal liknot ba otah hashlemut. That in that land we could acquire the totality of what God taught us. If you are a majority, you dominate the culture. If you are a minority, it is impossible that you will not be influenced by radio, television, magazines, newspapers, philosophy, just the very air. And that's the reason why the Kodesh Baruch Hu made a land-centered faith. He wanted us to be in our land, and as much as possible, an isolated country, without the cultural gamma rays coming in from outside. And we are the only such people. Islam, for example, let's say Christians. One can be a perfectly wonderful Christian and not live in Rome. There is no need to be a Catholic living in Rome. You'll be as good a Catholic living in San Jose, whatever it is. A Muslim need not live in Mecca. The maximum is that he has to visit there once in a lifetime for his Hajj. But no people has to live as a mitzvah to live in a special country. No faith, except the Jews. And there is a reason for it. And we can see with our own eyes today the tragedy of the exile. And not for this, a remarkable Gemara in Sukkah, that God regrets several things that he did. I don't know whether God can regret, but that's what it says, God can regret. And one of them is that he sent the Jews into the exile. Now the question was, why should God regret? After all, it was a punishment. I mean, the Jews sinned, and he warns here 135,000 times, if you sin, you're going to be exiled. So the whole purpose of the exile was to make them do tshuva. Right? We're suffering, we're bodily, what do we do? And we're sorry. Lehefer, being in the exile was the worst possible thing. It made us so that even a religious Jew who was in the exile became absorbed by the Gentile concept. Not for nothing that you hear rabbis in the West babble the way they babble about concept. Not for nothing. It's not their fault. Not for nothing that German rabbis spoke like Germans. I mean, Orthodox rabbis spoke like Germans. I mean, they of course kept Shabbos. When it came to ritual, nobody argued about rituals. Ritualism was clear. But the esoteric, the concepts of Judaism, that became, it was like, it just fell. It just fell as a sacrifice to all of the larger cultural, to the cultural concepts of the majority. And that's why, over and over and over again, you have this concept here of Eretz Yisrael. And in fact, in last week's parasha, remarkable statement, which is brought down in the Sifri. Rashi brings it down, but it's a Sifri. And he says, I'll give you the exact wording because it really is an interesting concept. Rashi says here as follows. He says, "Lachar she'tigalu." After you have been exiled, listen to this. Listen to this. After you have been exiled, heyu mitsuyanim ba mitzvot. Wrap yourselves and become involved in doing the mitzvah. No, keep the mitzvah.
What's the big deal?
What is he telling us? Naturally, I have to keep the mitzvah. What's the difference? If I fill in here, fill in there, I have to keep the mitzvah. Hanichu tefillin asu mezuzot. Why? What do you mean why? Because it's a mitzvah to do it, right? No. Kedei shelo yu lachem chadashim kishetachzeru. So that they won't be strange to you when you return to the country. Now think of what he just said. The most obvious reason why someone should put on tefillin in Brooklyn is because it's a mitzvah to put on tefillin in Brooklyn. Nope. Not a mitzvah. The mitzvot were only given for here. Ever since, if we stop putting on tefillin and stop eating kosher and stop keeping Shabbos in the exile, we'll forget it and we'll, and as Jews, we'll be lost. So therefore, you have to do it there anyhow. And really, an incredible kind of assembly. Originally, only here, because over there you'll do the ritual, but it'll be warped within the warped concept. So the original mitzvah was put on tefillin. What is the ritual? The ritual grows out of a concept. The ritual is the external manifestation of a concept. If there's no concept, you have a sterile ritual. And then, what's happening? Nothing then. So since the concepts could only stay normal and uncorrupted and unsullied and unchanged, and undamaged in Israel, that's where everything was to have been. Since you're going to be in the exile, so keep them so that they won't be strange to you. The same kind of a concept we find in next week's parasha, in Shoftim, Perek Yud Zayin. So the pasuk says as follows: Ki yimatzeve kirbecha, if there shall be found in your midst, ba'achad she'arecha, in one of your cities. Now, every time it uses the concept ba'achad she'arecha, it always means in Eretz Israel, because we only have cities in Eretz Israel, and I'll explain that in a second later. If in one of your cities, in your midst, in one of your cities, there is an Isha or Isha, a man or woman, Asher Yaset Hara Be'enei Hashem Elokecha, who shall do evil in the midst of, in the eyes of God, what? Lavor Brito, to break his covenant. And this is talking about Avodah Zarah. In other words, if someone worships idols, And then it goes on what one should do. The Ramban asks, why does it emphasize Ba'achad she'arecha in Eretz Yisrael? We know that it is asur to be obeyed Avodah Zarah. You aren't allowed to worship idols anywhere. And the same mitzvah would be anywhere. Why does emphasis? If you should catch somebody worshiping idols in one of your cities, in Eretz Yisrael. So the Ramban says the following thing. Give you the example first here, so I'll save a little bit of time. So he says, "Malderecha emit." He says, "It appears to me that the correct truth, that the correct way is, he his kir be'achad she'arecha, that he mentioned this phrase in one of your gates or one of your cities. Bavu shamal, because at the end of the pasuk, he said, Avor Brito, that he will guess that he violated the covenant. Vehi hatoiva ha naseit b'Yisrael. This is a terrible, terrible, an abomination done in Israel. V'yodia hakatu ki habrit be'eretz habrit. The only time one, by worshiping idols, literally, can violate the covenant, is only in Eretz Israel, which is the land of the covenant. Aval hadar b'chutz la'aretz ki'ilu oved avodah zarah. He said, but someone who lives outside of Israel is always as if he is worshiping idols. And therefore, you can't say that if he actually worships idols, he has now suddenly violated the covenant. He always violates the covenant outside just by living there. And this is based upon a Tosefta in Avodah Zarah called Hadar B'chutz, the Chutz Aretz, anyone who lives outside of Israel. It is as if he worships idols in purity, meaning he isn't actually worshiping them. And the answer, why? Unkelis says, because when one lives under the goy, it is as if he is admitting that the God of the goy is the true God. And therefore, while he isn't actually worshiping him, it is as if he is worshiping. And therefore, it's impossible, therefore, in this pasuk to say he has suddenly done something to violate the covenant by being outside of Israel. And so to speak, worshiping idols, he already violates the covenant. We have in Perek Yud Beit, back to our parsha, Yud Beit, Pasuk Kaf Gimel, the Isur of eating blood. There is, and of course, we all know that there is an Isur to eat blood. We are not allowed to. Rak Chazak, only strengthen yourself, Yivilti Achol Hadam, so that you not eat the blood. The Gemara says, Gemara in Makot, Daf Kaf Gimel, says the following. You notice the word says, strengthen yourself, be strong, and don't eat blood. Umayim hadam, shenafsho shel adam katsam yimim. Blood, by its very nature, most people don't want to eat. Drink blood anyhow. I mean, even if there's no law, blood is not the most, you know, delicate thing in the world, unless you're a Maasai who lives in Africa and they cut the cows and the Indians. But for the average person, drinking blood is really not a happy thing. You know? So the Torah comes and says, don't drink the blood. Be strong. Don't drink your blood. And then it says, and it finishes it saying, Leman yitam lecha, and if you don't do it, I'm going to bless you and it'll be wonderful for you. I'm going to make this good for you. So the Gemara says, Umayim hadam, consider it with the mitzvah of dam, shenafsho shel adam katsamim, that naturally a person's soul, he becomes nauseous at the thought of drinking blood. Nevertheless, haparish mi menu, mekabel schar. Nevertheless, someone who doesn't do it receives a schar, a reward, because he followed the mitzvah. So he says, gezel, so that's stealing, harayot, immorality, shenafsho shel adam mitzavela, that it's not that stealing is a temptation, immorality is a temptation. Haparish mehen, if someone doesn't do then, someone who has the capability to not to do something which is pleasurable, how much more so? Now, the question here arises. That's, of course, an explanation. I think there is an even greater explanation to the question, why was it necessary for God to give a mitzvah not to do something which by its very nature people don't want to do? I think there's a far deeper, tremendous reason. And is based upon a sifra, not a sifri, but a sifra, which is the Torah according. The sifri is the Medrash on Bamidbar and Dvarim. Sifra the Medrashan Torah Kohanim Yikra. And in there it says, Minayin lo la'adam. How do we know that a person should not say, I don't like pork. I don't like pork. I hate pork. But rather, he should say, I love pork. Elamaya said, what can I do? I love it. It's great. I used to eat in a Chinese restaurant. The fact of the matter is, I love Chinese food. But God said no, therefore I don't do it. And what's the difference whether he does it? What's the difference? Because the whole purpose of the Torah is not to simply do things because I don't like it, so I don't do it. I love davening, so I daven. I love to go to shul because of that. The purpose of doing the mitzvah is, even though you don't like it, do it because the Kodesh Baruch Hu said it, because God said it. And that's the whole purpose of Kabbalat Ol Malchut Shamayim, of accepting on yourself the yoke of heaven and smashing that big me that's inside every person, the big eyes, the big eye. Every person. You know, sometimes you see people with these, shirts, and the sweaters, and university sweater, Y, Yale, H, Harvard. So everybody walks around with a big eye. I mean, the whole purpose is to smash the eye, to smash the me, because that's the whole purpose of Torah. Kedusha, holiness, is to take you out of you and raise you above you. And the lower the person is, the higher the person is. The more he is able to get rid of his arrogance and sink low in terms of ego, the higher he is really. And so over here, that's the reason why God gave a mitzvah not to eat blood, such a simple matter. Do it not because you don't like blood. Do it because I said don't eat blood, so that you'll know. The same one who said don't eat blood also said don't eat the steak if it isn't whatever sort, if it's from a cow which wasn't slaughtered properly. The same one that gave you obvious things which you would do anyhow, also gave you things which you would not do if he didn't tell you. You have the same concept of the ability to overcome your you, this me inside each person, in order for Kablat Ol Malchut, also in this week's Parsha, in Perek Yud Dalet, which is talking about Banim Atem Lashem Elokichem, you are children unto the Lord your God. Lo Tidgodedu, Lo Tasimu Kacha Ben Enichem. Don't. It was the custom, it is still, that when they mourn the death of mother, father, some very close person, that their mourning knows no end. They tear their hair out. They cut themselves. It's, a terrible, terrible mourning. There's an Isur. The Jew is not allowed to over mourn. He's not allowed to mourn over. So there's actually one reason given, but it's the same. It's by two people. The Ramban, first of all, Ibn Ezra says, Achoshet Tedusha Asher Atem Banim Lashem. After you've been told that you are children of God, He is your Father. V'hu itchem yoter me'ah. He is more to you than your father, your paternal father or mother. Lachen al tidgodedu al kol mashe yaseh. No matter the greatest tragedy that he brings on you, don't go crazy, don't overly mourn. Ki kol asher yaseh hu latov. Everything that he does is for the good. Bimlo tavinuhu. If you don't understand it, that's because it's like Kashelo Yavinu Habanim Ha Ktanim Maseh Avihim. Little children also don't always understand why their father's doing something. Rak yismuchu alav, but they eventually say, "Far, he probably knows what he's doing." Kein tasu gam atem, you also. Don't know that there must be some reason, and therefore, an over grief and extreme grief is in essence also a subconscious crying out, "Why did God do this? Why did God do this?" And the Sforno says as follows: Shein ra'uy ha'ot tachlit ha'dagah v'hatzar al ha'karov ha'med. It is not proper, he says, to do the extreme of worry and sorrow over the dead relative, kasher nish'av ha'karov ha'nichbad mimenu b'malah, when your closest relative and most and greatest one still remains above, meaning God. L'fichach atem banim l'ashem, shehu avichem. You are children unto the Lord. He is your father. V'hu kayam la'ad, and he still lives, and he lives. Ein ra'uy, therefore it is not proper. Shetidagu v'tidablu b'tachlit al shumet. Therefore, to an extreme, you shouldn't mourn over any human or finite death. What is he saying here? There's the ability of a person to overcome his own natural tendencies to want something, even something of this thing. The Gemara tells us that when Yosef, for the first time after so many years, met his father Jacob, Yaakov, so it says that Yosef ran to him and he wept on his shoulders. And the rabbis say, but Yaakov didn't, because he was saying Kriyat Shema. I must tell you something. There was a father who mourned his son's death to an extreme degree. It was his favorite son. Mourned for years, he believed that he was dead. Finally, he finds out he's alive. Picture us. Your son's alive. You now find his. And now you're traveling from Canaan to Eretz Goshen. Every minute I wait. When am I going to see him? And finally, there he is. And he runs to you. And he hugs you. And you don't hug him as you're saying, Kriyat Shema. An incredible lesson in that. An incredible lesson. That which is right and that which is emet and that which is tzedek and that which is yosher, that which is God. If God says it, that's the proper way. And the ability to subordinate our feelings is so important, because you see what happens when that doesn't happen. Look what's happening today. With the evut, with the sickening, the corruption of this concept of rachamim, and everybody is worried about the Arab, and everybody is worried about it. We have corrupted the concept of what is justice and what is mercy and what is purity and what is good, because we have allowed our own feelings to overcome that. And over here, you see over and over again how the Torah attempts to say, bind your feelings and harness them. Even in this case, a terrible tragedy, a father, mother died. A person wants to, true, mourn, no question, but don't overly mourn, because your father in heaven is still alive. Or because by overly mourning, inside you can't help but have a complaint to God. So therefore, harness the me, the I inside you. Harness the eye inside you. And know that if you can do that in these areas, then you will certainly be able to do it when God tells you, this is tzedek, this is rachamim, this is justice, this is the way to be, even though the Western world does not think so. Malchut. This whole book is meaningless, absolutely meaningless. There was a fellow kid here last Thursday when I spoke, a British kid, a British boy. And they're the classic case of what I'm talking about. They are ritualists. I'm sure this kid keeps every ritual, but who lives in the most goyish world of concepts that you can possibly imagine. He's ashamed of certain concepts, and so he changes them. And that's what we have. One of the problems with the Baal Tshuva movement in America is that in the great desire to show the Baal Tshuva how wonderful Judaism is, many of the famous rabbis who are Baal Tshuva rabbis will purposely change concepts. Maybe in their own hearts they have this conflict. You cannot help but have a conflict if you were born in America. As a child, you were raised on certain concepts. This is fair. This is right. This is nice, and so on. You cannot help but have a conflict when that suddenly clashes with suddenly Jewish concept. You cannot help but have that conflict. And you've got to overcome that conflict by choosing. And when, you know, Eliyahu said to the Jews, you can't straddle the fence. Either Baal or the Lord. You can't be both. Either one. Well, that's actually what, you know, he was saying here. And I can only read to you in last week's Parsha the commentary on the Ibn Ezra, which I think I've once read, which is really an incredible thing. In Perek Yud Aleph, it's towards the end of Parsha Akev. Perek Yud Aleph. So the Pasuk says, Ahava et Hashem Elokechem, to love the Lord your God, v'alechet b'chol drachav, to go in all of his ways, u'davka bo, to cleave to him. To cleave, like to stick to him, like, you know, glue, to cleave to him. U'davka bo. So the Ibn Ezra says, v'hu sod gadol, it's a great secret. That's v'hu sod gadol, and Ibn Ezra. That's nice. So I mean, tell us the secret. What's the secret? So the Avi Ezer, which is a parish on Ibn Ezra, says the following: Nechonim divrei harav. The words of Avi Ibn Ezra are true. Kisod Hashem nireyav. The secret of the Lord is given to those who fear Him. Hadvukim b'midotav. Those who cleave to his concepts, to his attributes. Yesod atzum, he says there's a tremendous secret here. Shelo lahachlif avodat ish be'achiv. That you shouldn't switch, take this concept when you should use this concept, for example. Ve'le'achoz be'rachmanot, b'makom she'tzarich le'kas. A Jew should never seize mercy at a time when he has to be angry. He says there was a time to be angry. There was a time then that one doesn't say, I realize they killed Rose, but what good will it be for us to go? He says there's a time for mercy and a time for anger. Kigon al ha'avayan, a criminal. You don't always say, Nebuch the criminal. It isn't always Nebuch the criminal. Sometimes the criminal has to be criminal. O shalole hachzik ba'anava, don't always be humble. We'll let things go. Ani mevater al ze, I'll let it go. Bemakom she tzarich lehalbish, at a time, at a moment, or in a place when you have to dress yourself in geut o nekama, or vengeance. There's a time when you have that vengeance. And don't be always, I don't want vengeance. I'm a quiet guy. I'm a nice person. I'm a modest person. I'm ready to overlook this. Kemaser Pinchas, as Pinchas did. He didn't overlook. He knew this is a time of vengeance. He went into vengeance. Umuatim hein b'nei aliyah. Few are the people of greatness. Asher yochazu b'milot adelch emet, who sees these attributes and you know, use them in a proper way, vein koshil bam, and never stumble. Halohema hagdolim asher ba'aretz. These are the gdolim in the land. The ability to get rid of all this goyishkeit in us, all this, all these westernized concepts, which seem so right to us and so natural to us, and it's a terrible, it's an almost an agonizing thing to say, but I don't care, it says we have to do this and this and that's it. Very, 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 very difficult. Very, very difficult. But that's the whole person. Uldafka bo, to cleave to God, like I stick to him. He says this, that's it. I follow him. This is the path, I follow it. I follow it. Not an easy matter. Especially in our days when we have all kinds of guilt feel. The average Orthodox Jew is filled with guilt feel. I know why the average Orthodox Jew is not ready to do what has to be done. He has guilt feels. He's not. So, he has great, great guilt feels about what's written here. Great guilt feels. He can't cope with it. Therefore, he either doesn't think about it, or he perverts things. And he says, like that British fellow, we're talking about a gear toshav. So he quoted one of the head of Jews College. Now, Jews College is like YU. It's in England. And this person whom he quoted is a big Talmud Chacham. I know he's an American-born fellow, but big Talmud Chacham. Big, he must really be. And he quoted him. If he quoted him correctly, pretty sad. He said that this rabbi said, and he said, that the uncomplimentary things in the Talmud about Goyim, that's his phrase, the unpleasant things said about Goyim, apply to Akum, to only idol worshippers. And then he also mentioned that famous Rambam about the Ger Toshav, which is really a rather unpleasant thing to say. He said, that's only an Akum. Now, you really don't, you're not to be a Godel of Israel. You're not to be a Katan of Israel to know that that's absurd. That the very definition of a Ger Toshav, before you can even arrive at whether he pays Misin, Mishibud, and all this thing, in order to qualify to be a Ger Toshav, you have to first give up idolatry. That's the first thing he has to do. After he gives up the idolatry, now we deal with can he live in the country and with the museum and all the unpleasantries. Now, it's possible that this rabbi said it because it is so difficult for someone who is steeped in the Goyishe culture. It's very difficult for him. It's a very, 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 very painful thing. I was reading. That was Chaval. If any of you have, there is this book, History of Zionism by Walter LaCour. And in I think the first chapter somewhere, he describes as the Jews of Western countries receive their freedom and emancipation. And suddenly, the anti-Semites started saying, the Talmud says this, the Rebbe says this, and they said, no, it isn't true. They were embarrassed to find out that lots of what it said was true. That this concept of the Jews want to be separate, and you can't drink wine by a goy, because if you drink wine, you become close to him, you end up marrying him, and so on. And these were embarrassing things that the Gentile knew about and the Jew didn't know about it. And so naturally, what do you do if you're embarrassed? So you change the Torah. So the reformer, of course, did it blatantly. The Orthodox do it much, much less so, much less blatantly, but in a much more subtle manner. And for that, there is no forgiveness for almost a deliberate effort to get around this thing, to read it. It's not really what this means, but it is really, it is really what this means. It is really what this means. The purpose, when people speak about Aravid, he's also made B'Tzelem Elohim. He's also made in God's image. Of course he's made in God's image, and so was Hitler made in God's image. What relevance does that have to anything? The purpose of Torah was that good shall be in this world, and not evil. That's the whole purpose of the world. And if evil is in this world, then the evil has to be taken out of the world. That's the purpose here. It has to be taken out of the world. Here's the question of, come on, live and let live. You do your thing. That's not the way it is. Almost every basic Western concept is at odds with Judaism. Almost every single one. Starting with the whole purpose of why we're on this earth. Tolerance is at odds with the purpose of Torah. Certainly there is a tolerance within the context of Torah. Of course, certainly. I mean, obviously some dumb satma that, you know, cuts off a beard of, you know, the Babiches is a sickness. Of course, both bells and satma and so on are within the context of the Torah. So this one differs. And I mean, he's off the wall. What's the difference? But he has a right to be off the wall within this context. Within the walls of Torah, he has a right to be off the wall. What's the difference? But without the context of Torah, there is no tolerance. I have a right. It's my body, my life, my this, my... There's no such thing as mine. There's no such thing as mine. It's what God gives us. And he gives with conditions. He's the great landlord. You come, listen, I like to rent life. He's all right. You want to rent life? Good. Here's a lease. No dogs, no, I mean, no this, no that. Is it son? I saw it. You have life? If you break the lease, there are various things that can happen. Either God, either there's a penalty clause, which lets you still live, but with a penalty, otherwise you don't live. That's the whole point, and that's a difficult concept in our modern times, in which freedom is the great thing. Now, the struggle in this country today has nothing to do with peace now. Nothing at all. It has to do with the kind of a people and the kind of a country this is going to be. Because the same people who are in peace now and are upset about how Polshim Chevron are the same people who are against Shabbat and the same people who are against this and the same people who are against that. They're the same camps, the same two camps for the most part. The struggle here is, will this be it? Judaism versus Hellenism. That's the struggle. And it's more difficult than at the time of the Maccabim, because at least there, Jews were in Eretz Israel, and the foreign thing had to be imported. Here, from the beginning of the states itself, it was created with all this horror. Certainly for Westerners, if for people who came as Olim, from anywhere, they brought with them their little goals, Russian goals, American goals, Canadian goals, British, so on. So that's why this is so much more difficult than in those days. In those days, the Maccabim were sure, not the slightest doubt, this is the way to do it. That's it. The Jew goes and worships in public, Avodah Zarah, boom, kill him. Nobody thought twice about him. Of course, my God, what he's doing, what a horror. Here, it would be called in our days, but let's say a victimless crime. That's a victimless crime. He's not hurting anybody. Well, that's the point. That's true. There is a concept in modern days of victimless crime. In Torah, there is no such thing as victimless crime because you are always the victim. You are the victim. You are the victim. The destruction of your soul. You are the victim. And that's just as a Jew is not allowed to take his own life. Totally, he can't take it in parts either. He isn't allowed to take it in parts either. That's what it is. Because your life is not yours to keep or to take. Your life is there to do what you have to do. And that's called freedom. Freedom to do that which God wants, which ultimately frees you in the greatest possible way. There's a tremendous, the ability not to be hung up on your body and on your food and on your, this is the greatest freedom of all. Those people who claim to be free are really the greatest captives of them all. They simply cannot free themselves from their needs. Their I has conquered them. It's like a person who buys a brand new car. Every Sunday he's washing. The car owns him. He doesn't own him. The car owns him. And it's the same thing with these people who are hung up on materialism. They are slaves to it. They're not free. They're slaves. Okay, any questions? Yes. Yes.
About the mitzvah of Yishuv HaAretz. Yes. So, you know, many times in Torah about, you know, when you come to land, you know, Harashtem V'Yashavtem, right. Mentioned about Midbar L'Gimel, and but in my discussions with people who don't believe in this, religious people, they'll say, true, it's a mitzvah. Mm-hmm. Just like, you know, my Mahronim is a mitzvah. But they don't say Alhamdulillah, I do. But they say, where is it a chiyuv? I mean, like it says, you know, Ushmoritem et Shabbat. But then but they say regarding Israel, it says, when you come, blah, blah, blah. They say, no place to say, like this commandment, Tavo et Haaretz. So how can they make a chiluk between a mitzvah and a chiyuv?
Well, you know, quite obviously, you can do anything you want. That's precisely why they you know, chose this for the pasuk. Why in Ramban, why in the Sifri. I mean, the fact is, they can't get around the fact that the Sifri says that mitzvah Yishuv HaAretz, not only is it a mitzvah, but it is equal to all of the other mitzvah. Now, obviously they also knew this question, ki tavo, mei tavo, mei tavo. So obviously that didn't bother them, because it's an absurd question. It says over here, Ki atem ovim et hayaldein lavo lareshet et haaretz virishtem otah vishatem ba. I can't get any clearer. And you shall inherit it and you shall live in it. I don't know how much clearer you can get than that. I don't know how much clearer you can get than that. I've heard this concept of whether it's a mitzvah, a chovah. Frankly, I don't know what. And I've heard it from some people too. I don't understand what he's talking about. I don't understand what he's talking about. I can't understand. Someone says like they are, he has a concept that till the Mashiach comes, we aren't allowed to do that. I can say that. Of course, he's wrong. I mean, but at least there, I can see where he's coming from. This concept of a Chovah, you have a Sifri Beferish that says it is a mitzvah, and not only is it a mitzvah, but it's like one of those five or six that the Torah says is equal to all the others. There are five or six that are equal to all the others. Mila and Shabbat and Tzitzit. A couple others. But very, very few. It's an incredible, how many times would they say, who says, Mayim Achronim is a mitzvah that's equal to all of the other mitzvahs in the Torah? It's really loud.
They'll say, you know, they'll take the Sifri and
this
is a commentary, but
what do you mean was a commentary? What are you talking about? How many times do we get possible from this thing? The Sifri is not a Medrash and I got it. You don't pass it from and I got it. The Sifri is not and I got it. There was
made by Rav. Rav was a Tana, Rav and Shmuel. Rav made it. And it's basically of the halachot there, which sometimes gives you in the form of a story. But the Sifra, or the Sifri, is not like a Medrash Rabbah. That's a halacha. Secondly, I don't have to tell you how many times it says in the Gemara in Musubis, in other places. I mean, what do they do with a concept like Kol Hadar B'chutz La'aretz Ki'ilu Ein Lo Eloka? One who lives outside of Israel is as if he has no God. So obviously, that's a pretty heavy statement to make. Or it is better to live out in Eretz Israel in Nazareth, in a city full of goyim with a majority of goyim, than in one that has a majority of Jews, like in Munz. What do you do with that kind of thing? So you have to, so all this nonsense, mitzvah, chovah, that's all nonsense. The most that you can do is that's not applicable in our times. That's the most that you that's Custer's last thing. No, it isn't applicable in our time. So no, so why not? So they say because you're not supposed to go up against the goyim, that has no relevance to the individual mitzvah. Let's assume for the time being we have no right to go up and forcibly create a state of Israel. What does the state of Israel have to do with Eretz Israel? What does that have to do with it? The same mitzvah was whether there is a state, there isn't a state. And when it comes to the live for the yachid, not to mention the fact that this business, I mean, there's of course there are, you know, a thousand answers about the state too, but the thing is this, that you will find, I'm convinced, the pity is that the Chumash is so brief. I would have loved to have the transcript, the protocols, of the debate between the 10 spies, and the minority of Yeshua and the you could have pulled him in all over the place. Of course this is so. Every reason why, when Ezra complains about the Jews are not coming back from Babel, of course they had their reason, and of course it was couched in terms of a chabura and a pupil and a little safer answering Ezra the Zionist. Of course this was so. Of course this is so. Our problem is that because we look at the Tanakh not in terms of that it really happened. It didn't really happen. These aren't real people. See, this is a holy book. These are real people, real honest to goodness people who had the same problems that we had, and the same arguments, the same discussion, and the same thing, so that it reached a point where Reish Lakish, the Gemara in Yuma, doesn't want to even shake the hand of Rabbi Baron Bachana, who comes from Babylon, and he says, how I hate the Jews of Babylon. If you had come back, you would have brought the Mashiach. You didn't come back, so look at it now. I mean, such a point. So, certainly the Jews in Babylon had reason, and so on and so forth. This is the problem. This was always the problem. Sitam the Kuzari, always the problem. And we always seem to feel that it has no relevance. When we learn this, it's as if there is no relevance. That's why we in the Yeshivot, when they learn, it's a non-conceptual learning. It's a non-conceptual learning. Instead of stopping it and saying, oh, what concept have we just learned from this that we can take out and not leave on page, paragraph proposition. Let's take out the concept now and carry it with us so that every time we run across the same thing, we say, oh, here's the concept. Here it is. This is it. But since that's not taught, people somehow think that Torah, the Shema means just Torah Lishma. This isn't true. Torah Lishma doesn't mean that you shouldn't take it out from it and learn from it something practical. Torah Lishma means you shouldn't use it for a material purpose and so on. That's a kind of, that's an indifference. A person who learns to be a rabbi, why am I learning Torah? Because I get smicha. That's rule. That's a shalot Lishma. It said, but Torah Lishma does not mean that just, it doesn't, I don't want to hear about today, that's this, I'm learning, that's it for, that's it. That's the problem in the yeshiva. We really have, there's no connection between what happened then and what's happening today. This is the tragedy. And so we repeat the same mistakes over and over and over again. And probably with the same terms, in the same arguments also. Okay, I just want to make one comment about that. So, look, you know, I think it's very, very nice that these people come here and want to learn. I think learning is great. Learning is great because it teaches you what you have to do.